Remember what I said at the very beginning. This Sufi gathering is happening on the inner and the outer plane. The inner plane is outside of time. The outer plane, where we are present, belongs to the rules of time and space. But when they join together, something else can happen. Something can become alive. And it has begun to become alive. This conference is already a living, dynamic center of light that is accessible not only to you. This conference is a state of presence. Is this buzz necessary, or is it all the time? Maybe it's just the way it is. I haven't heard it before. I only got told at 4:30 this morning to talk about it, so it will be interesting for me as much as for you. And this has to do with the relationship between absolute truth and relative truth. It's kind of a tall order to be, have to talk about, but I'll see where it goes. Absolute truth is the reality of the divine beyond any concept, any notion. As it is said, beyond even our idea of the beyond. It is even beyond non-existence. There is a reality beyond non-existence, beyond non-being, beyond all the planes of non-being. It is totally, completely real. And one experience of that, unless you had been prepared by lifetimes of spiritual practice, would shatter everything you believe in, everything you don't believe in, everything that exists, everything that doesn't exist. It is as simple and complete as that. That is why it is said there are 99 veils of light and 99 veils of darkness separating us from absolute reality. Otherwise, we would be fried. It is beyond the piercing light, it is beyond the dazzling darkness. It is unnameable, and it is real, and it is complete, and it is the very core of all Sufi teachings. It is beyond love. It is to be avoided at all costs. And it is totally and completely present in every moment of existence and every non-moment of non-existence, because it is the real. And without that essence of reality, nothing could exist. And nothing could not exist. I use those two because there are planes of non-existence and there are planes of existence. And both of them are completely, utterly dependent upon the real for their very nature and for their very lack of nature. For their existence and for their non-existence. The real is beyond both. And yet the real is present in everything. The real is the subsistence of our being and the essence of our non-being. It is not relative, it is not dependent upon anything. And it is imprinted within us. And a Sufi path, any living Sufi tariqa, carries the real in an energetic form in its energy stream. It is very, very carefully protected as an energy stream. It is exceedingly dangerous. Nuclear energy is child's play compared to the effect of the real. Those 99 veils of light and 99 veils of darkness have a very particular purpose, which is to shield humanity from what is real. And the masters of the path know how to work with what is real in the planes of existence and also in the planes of non-existence. Because Sufi masters work both in non-existence and in existence. And as I said, the energy stream of a tariqa, and what is a tariqa in essence, it is an energy stream from the beyond of the beyond through the planes of manifestation to make it accessible to the souls and in some cases also to the physical structure of those who follow a tariqa. And any tariqa is the real that takes a particular quality of energy to nourish humanity. But the real itself is always shielded. And there is a tradition, a Sufi tradition, that there is in humanity one human being who embodies completely that which is real through all the planes of existence. He is known as the Pole of Poles, or she is known as the Pole of Poles, the Qutb. Usually this person is hidden, just as the real is hidden. There is a beautiful story of Ibn al-Arabi when he was in North Africa and he was at a gathering of Sufis. And there was a Sufi there who had a withered arm. And everybody else kind of didn't take notice of this Sufi. He wasn't a sheikh, he wasn't anybody important. And they met at a gathering, they were discussing the Quran. And then that night, in his meditation, Ibn al-Arabi was shown that this man with the withered arm, he was the Pole of Poles. And when he met him the next day, and again at a gathering, Ibn al-Arabi said, "During the night I was shown who is the Pole of Poles. And this being, because such a person is really just a being, said, yes, you were shown who it is, but you are not going to say who it is." And Ibn al-Arabi didn't, and he never met him again in his life. And he remained hidden. Just as the real is hidden in this realm that we call the world. And the real is even hidden on the inner planes. The absolute truth is clothed, is veiled, and yet is entirely present as much as it is not present. But the masters of the path, the great beings who look after humanity, the friends of God, have learned how to work, or they have been taught, although there is no teacher in this sense. It has been given to them to work with the real in the world that is not real. It is an exceedingly dangerous work because the real is exceedingly dangerous. A slight deviation could have catastrophic consequences. I always love this story of the young man who was learning his alphabet in the Middle East. And he was in school. And the first letter of the alphabet is the Alif. And all the students were practicing the Alif. And after a couple of days, the teacher said, "Then we go on to the second letter of the alphabet." And after an hour or so, The teacher walked past this young man and he was still practicing the alif. And a week later, he was still practicing the alif. And a month later, he was still practicing the alif. And the teacher said, "What are you doing?" He says, "I haven't quite got it right yet." A couple of months later, he still hadn't quite got it right yet, so he left school. 2 years later, while the teacher was giving a geography lesson, there was a knock on the door. And a student came in. And the teacher looked at the student and he said, "I think I've got it now." And he walked up to the blackboard and he drew the alif on the blackboard and the whole wall split in two. That is the power of the one in this world of manifestation. And the higher one goes through the levels, the more powerful it is, because there is less density of matter, there is less density of thought, there is less density of concept. And there is a way to bring absolute truth down through the planes of manifestation where it can have a beneficial effect, which has to do with the will of God, which has to do with the will of God being incarnated directly. You see, the other day I spoke about submission. Total and complete submission. And I spoke about it with a lot of power for a reason, because it has to do with power. Power that is totally undiluted. Because when there is that degree of power, if there is not total and complete submission, the human being is demolished. Because if there is a tiny bit of resistance, even a thought of resistance, that energy would destroy the very structure of the mind. It would become, you know, it's like a pinball machine. You know the way in the pinball machine the ball comes and it bounces from side to side. Well, imagine pure, undiluted, incredibly powerful light coming and bouncing from side to side through your mind. Psychiatric hospital for the rest of your life, if you're lucky. I mean it. Only if there is total and complete submission. Submission so complete there is not even a thought, a concept, a remembrance of unsubmission. Can the power of complete, total truth come into the human being? It is so dangerous, it is so volatile, it knows nothing relative, it is absolute. You see, we have to understand we live in a relative world here. Everything exists that is relative. Everything that exists is relative. It depends upon something else. There is action, there is reaction. You can't turn this buzz off, Kerry? The lights? No? The world is relative. Things don't work. Actually, on this plane, things are not allowed to work totally. If they did, it would be very dangerous. We don't understand that. On this plane, there has to be failure. For example, my Sheikh was a very great being, and he said that he kept faults purposefully. Otherwise, he couldn't exist on this plane. Perfection is not allowed to exist on this plane. It has to do with the density of matter. It has to do with the way energy works on this plane. This plane is relative, even though in its essence it carries the seed of truth. Although absolute truth is even beyond perfection. Because there is nothing to be perfect. There is nothing to be not perfect. But there are occasions. Sorry. So this world is relative. This world is veiled. And the way normally the energy of absolute truth, it comes very gently down through the planes of manifestation. From far beyond non-being, it comes into being, pure being, which is the plane of the soul, where things just are. That is the reality of light upon light. That's the plane of light upon light. It comes from there down further through the archetypal world, the world of the gods and the goddesses, the mundus imaginalis. It comes down into the physical plane, and it comes down very gently, so that it doesn't disturb. So that it doesn't disturb the patterns of creation, so it doesn't disturb humanity, so it doesn't disturb the animals, so it doesn't disturb the plant. And it nourishes humanity. But by the time it's got here, it is very muted. It is just a remembrance of a remembrance of a remembrance of its indescribable pure essence. Just like, for example, a glass of beer has a touch of pure alcohol once. You don't want to drink 100% pure alcohol. It's dangerous. That is why, for example, traditionally, you never invite anybody to a Sufi gathering. Because then you would be responsible for what happens to them. They have to come of their own free will. They have to come of their own intent. It is one of the esoteric acts of adab. Because in a real Sufi gathering, there is this pure wine of remembrance. Present. And it can disturb a human being. It is not for everybody. So normally, in the best of times and in the worst of times, the pure energy of truth is filtered down through the planes. And it takes on form. We have the forms of religion. We even have the forms of spirituality. And the more it is filtered, the less pure it becomes. The more easily it becomes contaminated, the more easily it becomes caught in a thought form. The more easily it becomes an image. For example, we all know we can't have an image of God. But we try. We create them. We create an idea. Of course we do. It isn't real truth. It is relative truth. And most of our lives we work with relative truth. And that is fine. That is the way it should be. As long as we acknowledge that it is relative truth. The danger is when we say this is the truth. The moment there is a this, it can't be the truth. You know Lao Tzu, the name that can be named is not the name. The moment you say it is, it's gone. It is so important to always acknowledge that the truth you work with, even your aspirations, are relative. And that is why, on the path, it is so important to be able to give up at any moment, any concept, any idea you have of the path, of the truth, of the way, even of your aspirations. Because hopefully, with the grace of God, we are going beyond any definition, beyond any image, beyond that which can be defined. Like Rumi says, this is the shoreless sea, here swimming ends always in drowning. And we drown again and again and again and again. There is some, you know, nice idea about death before death. You do it once and it's over. No. You die again and again and again and again. And each time you create another image of the path, another image of the journey. And it works for a while. And then the energy of the path, the grace of the superiors, dissolves it, breaks it apart. Otherwise you are stranded on the shore of your own creation. The relative truth is what we create. We create beautiful images of spiritual life. They are not bad. They can be helpful. We create images of our teacher. And they are helpful for a while. But a real teacher is always non-existent. So no image can last. No image can survive. So normally, even the masters of love, they bring the energy of truth down very carefully, so as not to disturb. This is how it has been done for centuries. They know how to keep the truth veiled. This is, of course, part of the Sufi tradition of always talking in hints. You give it to the human being from the side, so they can catch it, so it doesn't disturb them too much. Yes, sometimes people need to be disturbed, but you have to be very, very careful. Even Jung, who was not trained in that way, he said, he actually put it differently. He said, you have to be very, very careful to whom you tell the truth. He said that he was a force of nature, and he saw how he could disturb people. We have this naive idea you should always tell the truth. Absolutely not. It's very naive. Mostly, you tell people what they want to hear and add a little bit of something else to it. You tell them what they want to hear so they accept it, and you add a little bit of something else so it changes a few circuits in the brain. It's very subversive, and it works. I mean, look, when somebody comes to the path, they don't want to be told they don't exist, they are an illusion, they are just a joke, forget it. You want to be told, look, there is a path, and you have something inside of you you want to realize, and you are going to grow, and you are going to change, and you are going to discover the heart of hearts. And you know, it sounds beautiful. And you speak to the human being in a language that is their language, that is the language of the heart, the language of the soul, and they believe you. Later, much, much later, you begin to say it isn't about this at all. Real spiritual life is either so banal or so extraordinary nobody would believe it. It is so completely ordinary and so totally other. Yes, there are lights and there is bliss and ecstasy and all of that. But it's only lights and bliss and ecstasy. Is it real? It's not so bad. Is it absolute reality? No. Because you have the experience. In absolute reality, there is certainly nobody there to have the experience. Mrs. Tweedy tripped up by sub with this when he was... Well, she argued with him, not tripped him up, argued with him. She always argued with him. And she said, he was talking to somebody and they asked him, have you realized the truth? Have you realized the self? And he said, no. And she said, but how can you say that? You are a great, great sheikh. You have realized absolute truth. And he said, oh, no. In absolute truth, there is nobody there to realize anything. Those are the words of a great master. So often Sufis veil themselves and they work with the truth hiddenly so as not to disturb people. To disturb them just enough to help them to evolve, help them to grow. Just enough pure alcohol in the wine to give them a little bit of something else. Most spiritual teaching are those placebos. What do you call them? Those little, you know, pills that don't have anything in them. Placebos. Placebos. Yeah. Yeah. Feel good, you know. Or feel bad, whichever is your route. Because real spiritual truth is so completely other. But what is interesting is that there are times in the course of humanity when certain rules no longer apply. And I have a feeling that we are coming into one of those strange, nebulous times. And one can give 100 reasons why. Because humanity is at a crisis. Because it doesn't work anymore. Because the soul of the world is starving. Because... But one doesn't really know. If you are really to ever approach anything on the mystical path, you have to begin by saying, I don't know. You can give reasons for it, yes. But they are just reasons. Pure knowledge is something very, very different. Anyway, as I said, the masters of love, the friends of God, those who have been immersed in Allah, work with the will of Allah. That is why they are allowed on the path to destroy human beings. You can only destroy a human being when permission has been given. In order to take a human being from existence into non-existence, they have to be destroyed. There's nothing else to do. Sometimes it can be done gently with love, with softness, with sweetness. Traditionally, it wasn't really done like that. Destruction, annihilation is, unfortunately. Well, there is this Sufi poem, the ego does not go with laughter and with caresses, it must be chased in sorrow and drowned in tears. And that is only the beginning. But I don't want to talk about that, it's a bit... What I meant to say is that it has to do with the will of God. There comes a time in the spiritual evolution when the will of God is allowed to destroy a human being. Permission has to be given because human beings are infinitely precious. And everything inside the human being rebels at that moment. Everything except the desire for truth. Because it's so wonderful to be a human being, and once you have passed that place of annihilation, of complete destruction, you can never come totally back. Part can come back, but you can never live as other people do. It doesn't quite work. Something has been surgically removed from what constitutes a human being. Then you are really somewhere dead. It is very, very devastating when it happens. Which is why it has to be done really often in a controlled environment, under the tremendous grace and protection of a sheikh, of a tradition. I'm really avoiding what I should be talking about. I'm very good at that. I get to a point and I go around and I make a nice little story and I go around and... There are times in the course of humanity when the will of God is allowed to come directly through all the planes of manifestation, and this is a time. When there is such an enormous need, such an enormous call, such an enormous state of despair, that the normal way of filtering the truth down through the planes is not going to work. For example, I tell you a story. Normally in my path, spiritual training takes 40 years. Even if you come to the path when you are 20, you know, by the time you are 60, you might... 20 to 40 years, anyway. And there is a story that Mrs. Tweedy tells in her book of Grandfather Guru, who had a disciple who was a young boy, well, a young boy, you know, in his 18 or 19, and he loved his sheikh so much. And one day the sheikh, he was sitting in the courtyard of a sheikh, he used to sit there just to smile at the sheikh. And the sheikh, in those days, they used to have staffs they walked on. And the sheikh took this staff and began to beat the boy. And he beat the boy until the boy was bleeding, and then the staff broke. And then he took up a big, big piece of timber that wrestlers used to wrestle with to train. And he took this great big piece of timber and he smashed the boy and smashed the boy. And at one point in this process, the family of the boy were also disciples of the sheikh. And he turned to them and says, "What do you think?" And they said, "We belong to you, life and death, do as you will." And he continued smashing the boy until the boy was just a bloody heap on the floor. And then he went into his room. And everybody just stood around there. And an hour later he came up and he looked at this bloody heap on the floor and he said, "Get up!" And the bloody heap came together and the boy was there again. And he was a realized human being for the rest of his life. And Baisab said, what was done in that 1 hour would normally take 10 years. Because the boy loved him, and it was the right time and the right place and the right people were there. And then certain things that can be done that otherwise cannot be done. And this has to do with the absolute will of God coming down right through the planes of manifestation and not following the laws of each plane of manifestation. This plane, for example, belongs to action and reaction. You do something and something reacts. When the absolute will of God comes down, there is no action and reaction because it is truth impacting truth. And it is. And we have forgotten that fact in all of our lives, and sadly even within much spiritual teachings. We all think it is relative. It is not relative. It belongs to the will of God, and it's time we grew up and accepted that and allowed the will of God to participate directly in life as we know it. Otherwise this planet is over. All the best ecologists in the world cannot save it. Just as all the best spiritual techniques will not take you to God. They're very good beginning. They help to purify you. They help to control your emotions. They help to channel the energy. But in the end, it is only the grace of God or the grace of your teacher that can take you where you need to go. Because we are talking about what is real as opposed to what is not real. A spiritual technique belongs to relative truth. It is not absolute truth. And something that is relative can only take you within the planes that are relative.
A spiritual technique cannot destroy a human being. It is not allowed to. Otherwise, it could be given to somebody and they could misuse it. Only a spiritual teacher who is merged into the Absolute has the right to destroy that which has been created by God. It is very simple. And why do I say that? Because it shows there is a way Absolute Truth can interact in this world. The will of God is absolute. It happens. On our path, we have an expression. We say instructions are given. If instructions are given, it is. It is going to happen. Nothing in creation is allowed to interfere because it is not relative. It comes from the highest plane where that which exists merges into that which doesn't exist, which is merged into absolute truth. And we, as Sufis, have the right to live absolute truth. And I mean have the right, because somewhere to be a Sufi, you have to say, I am prepared to sacrifice myself. Otherwise, it is all games. Beautiful games, spiritual games, very nice games, but essentially games. I have bought God, I have bought God. The bargain was easy. I gave myself completely and got Him completely in return. There is only one price, yourself. It doesn't mean you have to pay that price initially. No. Maybe you wait 20 years. But if you want the truth, that is the price. Because you have been created by the Beloved. Created with such care, with such tenderness, out of light. We are made out of light. Even physically, we are made out of stardust. Human beings are the most extraordinarily beautiful living organisms. We have physical bodies, we have bodies of light, we have... We last for thousands of years. And we are given free will. This is His promise. This is His grace. This is His gift to humanity. Even the angels don't have free will. Which is why on the path one can go even beyond the realm of the angels. The angels can only go so far. The angels just follow the will of God. And when a human being says yes of their own free will, then it has to be of their own free will. Which is why a teacher has to respect the free will of the disciple. Otherwise there is no spiritual training. There can be a facade of spiritual training, but there is no real spiritual training. Because it is the free will of the human being that carries the seed of divine consciousness of the human being. Because it is His gift to us. He gave it to us. Of course, we make an enormous mess with it. We've almost destroyed the whole world with free will. But that is His world and His gift. But as Sufis, as lovers of God, who say, Beloved, do with me as Thou wilt. I am here for Your sake. And we offer, even if a bit tentatively at first, we say, Beloved, I am Yours. I am lost without You. I am in a foreign land. I don't know the way home. Show me the way home. I will pay any price You ask. Just tell me. Then, because we offer of our own free will ourselves on the altar of love, on the altar of our own heart, we have the right to absolute truth. It is our birthright. As I said, normally it is hidden even from us. It is given through the grace of the Sheikh. This is the whole secret of seer, the secret substance that is the essence of any spiritual tradition that is given from heart to heart, from soul to soul. But it enables us to incarnate truth. It enables truth to be incarnated through us, unknowingly. I do not ask to see, I do not ask to know, I ask only to be used. I ask only to be used. There are servants among my servants who love me, and I love them, and they look towards me, and I look towards them. We are so caught up with doing, we have forgotten the real mystery of surrender and service, which is to offer one's whole being for the sake of one's beloved. But a group of Sufis who belong to God, who have said yes, are a vehicle for absolute truth to be incarnated in the world if it is His will. What is very interesting is when people talk about power, even spiritual power, there is only the understanding of relative power. People think about power as having power over other people, getting somebody to do what you want. People think that power is getting what you want, influencing things. That is for children. That is like who has more marbles in the school playground. There is, friends, a power that is not relative, that is absolute. That if it is said, it is, it is. And it never goes against anybody. They just have to keep out of the way. And as Sufis, we have access to that. Because it is the power of the absolute. This belongs to submission. If one is in submission, then this power can come right through one. And it can change life, because life belongs to God. And it can do in a moment what all the patterns of evolution would take generations or centuries to do, because it doesn't belong to time. It is not a process. Relative power works through a process. Things take time to happen, to change. I have seen my Sheikh change me. When I was 22, in 1 hour, he changed me completely. He made me aware that I was a soul. It was not a process. It was his will turning something within me. The will of the absolute can change the world. It doesn't play power games, because it doesn't function on the level of duality. There is nobody else. Every other power, there are two people. Or there are three people, or four people. It's strange, about a couple of months ago I had a strange dream of Washington. I don't know why I got this dream, I'm still kind of puzzling over it. I was at one of those Washington fundraising dinners. And everybody was there. There was Bush, there was Cheney, there was all the politicians were there. And it was very weird, because everybody was looking at everybody else to see who everybody else was talking to. Nobody was paying attention to anything. And that is what we understand as power. Everybody was looking to see what everybody else had, what influence somebody else had. The will of God is absolute. And we have access to it. Somebody in our group a while ago had a very beautiful dream, a teaching dream, in which our sheikh came to them and said, all of you have access to a very great being and access to the help of a very great being. And he said, what is more, you all of you have direct access to the absolute. It was very simple, but it's true. Because we say, yes, beloved, do with me as thou wilt. We give up our free will. Every other aspect of power is about human will. You want something. That is what power is understood as. And so it comes through the human will. And the ego is so tiny and so incidental. The will of God comes through the higher self.